Hello, beautiful people. Welcome to another episode of Nick and Garrett Get Serious About Jokes. I'm Nick.
I'm Garrett.
And we are back to talk a little bit about W. Kamau Bell's private school Negro Netflix special. We're doing the podcast. As always, we're brought to you by Eastside Legal, LLC. Eastside Legal, LLC. All right. Let's just go ahead and jump into it, man. We talked a little bit about doing another... You know, checking out another Netflix special and discussing it and kind of analyzing it. Now, I've met W. Kamau Bell. It was 2012 when he came to Nashville and he was performing. And so I'd heard some of his material, and I saw his old show that was on FX. But I never saw I've never seen his current show. Mm-hmm. But this was the first you'd been exposed to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what was your take on it?
I thought he was great. I thought it was really funny. It's interesting because, like, I felt like he kept touching on things that I was like, yes, it's so important that that's, like, a discussion.
Yeah.
And things that I felt like were, like, socially relevant. But the great thing is it never wasn't funny for me. I feel like a lot of comics, like, they'll have something that's important to them, usually something politically, and they'll take the time out of their special to be like, this is the thing that I believe and this is important or whatever, which is fine. But the way he did it, he talked about things that I think are super important, but it never felt like he paused the special. It never felt like he stopped the laughs. It felt like it was always funny. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was great. So like the first thing that I thought was super cool was like the when he talked about like the Doc McStuffins show,
yeah.
Which I had never heard of and I've never seen the show. But I think that's so cool and important because he's talking about it and it's like a kid's show and it's like easy to not take it seriously, but that's representation in media. And that's like really important because, you know, for better or for worse, the way people understand each other and the way we understand ourselves is through stories.
Yeah.
And the most, you know, most stories nowadays come from media. They come from movies, television, mm-hmm. books, things of that nature. So having stories, telling ourselves stories that represent all types of different people is so, so important. In my opinion, I think it's a thing that like things, I mean, it's something that like Doc McStuffins has done. And just with his two kids, you can see how it helps them because to them, the idea of a black woman doctor isn't crazy. It's just the way things are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought that was so cool. And again, it's like throughout the whole thing, it was funny. Like he never stopped and was like, we're going to talk about representation in media and how important that is for empowering people who are, you know, whatever. But like it was just funny the whole way through. And I think that's just a testament to him as a comedian.
Yeah, I thought so too. I remember I listened to his book on Audible. Which is, I don't know, I always forget how long these books are. They're usually anywhere from 8 to 13 hours. And mm-hmm. when it's a comic or a performer, they usually read it themselves. So I felt like even though the whole book wasn't meant to be funny, I mean, it was kind of an autobiography, but with some stand-up material mixed in. I felt like I'd heard the special before, even though I hadn't, because he does hit on some of the things that he talks about in the book, like Doc McStuffins,
right,
whom I had never heard of until the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but what I liked about it is the special is that he, like you were saying, he couches everything in a joke. So he's not just preaching. And then he tells a story with the Doc McStuffins, especially he tells a story that kind of, that illustrated it. And obviously it's exaggerated to a certain degree for comedic effect, mm-hmm. but his daughter going to the doctor,
right?
And you know the fact that the doctor wasn't a black woman, he didn't believe that it was she didn't. His daughter didn't believe it was the doctor was real, which I thought
right.
which is that in itself is humorous. But then he makes the story humorous as well by putting in punchlines,
yeah,
you know, every 15 seconds or so.
I think the part that I liked the most was when he was like, where she was like, I don't know if a white man can be a doctor. Like,
yeah,
I've never seen one.
That's what he. Or when he says, she goes, my daughter says something that kids never say. She goes, I'm tired.
Yeah,
which I thought that was pretty good. Something that I liked that he did. And he kind of did a lot of. And we as comics know this can be problematic. It's like joking about Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it gets done on the, you know, by late night hosts and everything. By the time you get to a club setting or a stand up setting,
yeah,
any kind of, yeah, it's like it. What are you gonna say that hasn't already been said? But I feel like his Trump humor, it didn't feel played. And even though he some of the things that he was referencing had happened, you know, a while ago, like when he says, like when he was talking about Trump saying, president was harder than I thought, being president was harder than I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a while ago. Like, it seems like, I mean, I guess it would be maybe not quite 2 years ago, you know, and yet I didn't feel like the jokes were dated,
mm-hmm.
or that the jokes were old or rehashed. Like, it seemed like he had a fresh take on it, even if it was the side of the argument he's on is the side that most comedians are on, but I feel like the angle he took mm-hmm. was unique. So
I
definitely appreciated that about him.
Yeah, I think I agree, because it's like, so a lot of people talk about Trump. So it's like when someone starts talking about Trump, it's almost like with people talk about politics a lot in general, mm-hmm. and it can feel tiring because it's like, all right, well, people disagree with you, so it can be mm-hmm. tricky. And Trump is like that times 10 because he's so outrageous as a character that it's easy to talk about him. So many people talk about him. But yeah, I felt like he made those jokes work, and it always felt funny. It didn't feel like he was like, let me take this time to like bash this person. It was like, it was all pretty consistently funny. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting that you mentioned that it didn't feel outdated, because I wonder if with a different president who doesn't have as many like scandalous things or remarks, if that would still be like relevant. Like if on his first year, President Obama was like, being a president is harder than I thought. I feel like most, like especially Republicans, would be talking about that for at least 8 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's interesting in that respect, but yeah, I didn't feel like they were like really tired and stuff. That's one of the interesting things, is because he spent so much time on like things about politics, particularly Trump. He spent a lot of time on that. That's a huge portion of his special, but it always felt funny to me.
Yeah, it did feel funny. And like you were saying, it feels like it's amazing how long, it was like 10 years ago that Obama was elected.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed like if something had happened his first year in president as a president, it would still be getting talked about.
Yeah.
To the point to where it's like, okay, we get it, you know?
Yeah.
There's a
clip from Obama, like, when he first became president, and he asked for, like, I don't know, he asked, like, for, like, honey mustard, like, a particular type of mustard on his burger.
Yeah.
And, like, the right-wing news shows, like, had, like, a field day. Like, they spent a week on this thing where they're like, oh, man, this president, like, he has to have this fancy mustard or whatever.
Really?
And they just made, it was like nothing. It was literally like he had a condiment preference.
Yeah,
and it was
yeah.
like this huge thing. So yeah. imagine what would have happened if he was like, man, being a president is really hard work.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I know, yeah. Yeah, it would still be a meme.
Yeah.
It would still be a meme, yeah. I'll say this about the special as well. The way it looked, and I watched the Carmichael Gerard Carmichael special, and the second HBO special where he's in the middle
of the
audience, and I never liked that before.
Yeah.
I think because the first time I saw it was Dane Cook and it was like a stadium. So it almost seemed like it was just too many.
Yeah.
Too overwhelming. But I think in an intimate setting,
mm-hmm.
a stage in the middle of everyone would be pretty cool.
Yeah. I actually am glad you mentioned that, because that was something I wanted to talk about too.
Yeah.
I had never really seen someone do a special like that before. So when I started watching it, I was kind of like, what's this? But as soon as he started like getting into his set, I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I never really thought about it, but the way that people, you know, current stages aren't made for comedians. They're made for, like, you know, musicians and for theater. So they're just not actually meant for comedians, and so it's a little bit like you're using this space that you don't need.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're standing under this mat, like, not like, like, I mean, at this level, like, when you're doing this, these specials, most of them are at, like, a traditional, like, theater.
Yeah.
And there's this one person under this massive proscenium arch or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's just all this space, and it's nice that they can walk, you know, and pace a little bit, but they don't need that much space. No one's going to walk from one side of the stage to the other.
Yeah.
And so, and it also, like, the way that the, those stages are made is, like, it's a separation from the audience and the cast or whoever. But the way it was set up in this special, that's all different. It's like he's in the middle and he's surrounded by people and he's like elevated, but it feels a lot closer and more intimate than traditional setups. And so it just made sense to me. Like, at first I was like, it was kind of like, oh, this is weird. But then it was like, oh, this makes sense for comedy because, I mean, it's a thing where, like, you're basically just talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, like, removing all those things that disconnect you from the audience that you're talking to just kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder what it would... I mean, I'm sure some comics would work better than others in that setting. I feel like, even though I don't feel like I'm super, like, physical, but I'll walk around a little bit when I'm on stage. I think that would... I think I could adapt pretty well to that, especially if I could practice. I think that would be the tricky thing, is practicing, like, because no venues, no open mic venues really have it to where you're facing an audience.
Yeah.
Well, the audience is facing you from all angles.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing that would be tricky about it.
I feel like it would be a little intimidating at first because you're surrounded at all sides.
Right, right.
And then you have to worry about, like, if you're facing the audience, you have to keep moving in order to face all of them. But I think, yeah, like you said, once you had some practice, I think it would be pretty easy to adapt to.
Let me ask you, Belle, my sister, she told me about the special. I mean, when I saw that it was on, I was like, I gotta watch it. And then she told me she had seen it, and she's like, it was kind of like a one-man show. I didn't think of it like that. It seemed like it was very much a special.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like in the vein of like Three Mics or Homecoming King or Thank God for Jokes, where you get these serious sort of ups and downs. It seemed like it was all just like straight up humor, a lot of political humor,
and, yeah,
personal story. But yeah, it seemed I didn't get the one man show vibe from it.
Yeah, I didn't really see that either. So
yeah.
Like, what would you consider a one man show as apart from like a comedy special?
Well, I will say this, based on his book, the way he got famous was from doing a one man special, a one man show.
Okay,
where it was more, I think they had some humorous parts, but it was more of a play than it was stand up. But so there may have been some, maybe because my sister, she has a film background and she works for Disney, she might have been able to see certain things that maybe wouldn't jump out at us that had the markings of a one man show. But I think when I think of one man show, it's entirely autobiographical. And everything sort of ties back into that person's origin story, so to speak.
Right.
And I think that is serious, but there's the humor element as well.
Yeah.
But it's not funny, but it has to have both of those. Like, it can't be all the way serious or all the way comedy. It has to have like waves of both.
So yeah,
that would be my take on it. And I feel like there's gonna be sitting at some point in a one woman show. Like the person acting is going to sit on a bench, sit on a chair, and address the audience in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there's almost going to be, it's more theatrical, there's going to be like an actual person putting a spotlight on the actor when they sit down.
Yeah.
You know, because it's, right. 'Cause it's theater more than stand-up.
Yeah, and that spotlight is, like, one of the things it does is it's like, this is the thing that's happening. It darkens everything else, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like, like talking about that separation between audience and performer. That's
yeah.
That's like, it amplifies that. It's like, this is the thing that's happening.
Yeah.
Everything else is dark. Pay attention to this.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, I wouldn't really, I don't know if I would consider it a one-man show. I guess I'm not super familiar in that, but
yeah.
I feel like it would have to have like you said, like a story. Like it, like there's a bunch of stories in it and things that happen, but I don't feel like they all go together except that there are things that happen to him.
Right, right, right. Yeah, there's not a progression of,
yeah.
of you know. But, and then, I mean, he talks about his kids early in his special, which is something we've talked a lot about.
Yeah.
It seems like the kids generally come up towards the end. They may make a brief cameo during like a specific joke, but for the most part, it's. But I mean, he incorporates,
yeah,
his children a lot.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And also like another thing we've talked about is like with the kids. Usually, they bring the kids in for like the last bit where it's
yeah.
like emotional and like sweet.
Yeah.
He was talking about his kids from the very beginning with the Doc McStuffins thing.
Yeah.
And I thought that bit was really kind of touching as well.
Yeah.
Like, so I thought that was interesting where you got to that point and it was like 10 minutes into the special.
Yeah.
And he was going there to a place usually people like will reserve for like the end.
Right, yeah. Well, he did. And it was interesting because at the very beginning I thought... I mean, I knew it was going to be good, but I felt like the opening jokes, they were kind of like, they seemed to be sort of general, like, slave jokes that, I don't know. Like, I feel like you kind of heard some version of before. And so I was like, man, I didn't know how it was going to play from then on. I knew it was going to,
mm-hmm.
I was going to like parts of it more than that first part, but it like some of those jokes at the very beginning seem like they can get, you know, in front of the right audience can get some laughs, but seem a little like people have done that before, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think that, you know, he seemed to have gotten to the good stuff fairly quickly in his,
yeah.
in his set.
One thing I really liked, because we've mentioned that he was political for a large portion of his special.
Yeah.
The political thing that I liked most was when he was talking about like the freedom of speech thing.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's a pretty common criticism of the left that the left is anti-free speech.
Yeah.
And there's certainly groups within the left, I think most people would agree, that like are kind of crazy. Like,
yeah.
Or there's at least, and how big or prevalent or powerful these groups are, I think, is a different discussion. But there are people that are like a little bit like, all right. But I don't know if it's a good criticism in general. But regardless of that, I think it's interesting when he was talking about, like at Berkeley, he's like, we're not anti-free speech, we're anti-bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you have freedom to say what you want, but you're not free from the consequences of the words that you say. And, I just thought that was such a good, almost like a response to a lot of those criticisms.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I just thought that was really cool. And again, like, it didn't feel like, okay, let me respond to this criticism. It was
right.
just a part of another joke, which is great.
Yeah, because the joke, you know, he used Minister Farrakhan as an example and his, you know, need to have security. And then he tied it in with, you know, Milo Yiannopoulos wait, that's not how you say his name, is it?
I think it's Yiannopoulos.
Yiannopoulos.
It looks harder than I think it's
than it really is. Yeah. He says him and Ann Coulter, they should hire the Nation of Islam. You know, that was a great misdirection on that joke. I don't think Ann Coulter and Milo Yiannopoulos are the same. I feel like Yiannopoulos is much more of a dangerous figure. But I get his point. I get Bell's.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's super inflammatory. He's kind of a troll, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, and I think, I just said her name.
Ann Coulter.
Ann Coulter. But she does it, but I think she does it within, like, a very controlled bubble. Like she'll go on CNN and say things that she knows are annoying and that she doesn't even probably believe herself. But I don't think she would say some of the things Milo would say. Like, some things are just so off the chain that I think... Anyway, but the joke itself was hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm talking about that, but... I do agree, and there's something that he said when I saw him. It was at Mercy Lounge in 2012, and he has a line I still use because it was when Paula Deen had gotten let go from Food Network for the video, and he goes, you know, Paula Deen, that's white people fired. That's not black folks fired. Like, black folks didn't get her fired. It's like if you go to any person who's black and you say, hey, there's an old Southern white lady who knows how to cook. Do you think she said the N-word at some point? We'd all be like, yeah, of course. So I use that. I'll still use that when the Paula Deen comes up. Or I'll use that as an example of sort of black folks getting mad about racism versus white folks. Or how well-meaning, left-leaning folks will get upset about something that they perceive to be racist towards black folks, and black folks are like, yeah, but we'll save our anger for something a little bit more extreme, or, you know what I mean? And I think the Paula Deen thing was an example. Like, I think most folks were like, it was 15 years ago. Like, you know, like, who?
I think that's so funny. I think the reason that it's a thing people can get outraged about and feel good about themselves is, like, it's pretty... It's not okay, but it's one person.
Yeah.
It's easy to criticize one person because the solution is easy. It's like, fire the person.
Right.
But it's harder to criticize something systemic because that's really hard to solve. So I feel like it's a thing that maybe people jump on because it's easy.
That's interesting.
You know, it's easy to talk about and it's easy to feel like self-righteous because I'm against this thing and the solution is easy.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that. But yeah, that does make sense. That you can almost take your anger out on this one person, and it kind of makes you feel maybe makes people feel better about their impotence to really enact.
I'm sure some people after they got Paula Deen fired, they were like, we did it.
We
fixed racism.
Right. Yeah. It's over. No. It's, but yeah, going back to the Bell special, man, like it kind of inspired me to try to do some more political humor.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think that a lot of my best jokes, are ones where I got them from reading the news. Sometimes it's reading odd news items. It's not even reading the news. But I feel like having that launching pad and almost commenting on these very specific things kind of gave me a little bit of a foot. Gave my writing and my joke telling a little bit of a foothold. Maybe even in a way I didn't realize, as opposed to me commenting on. Something in everyday life,
mm-hmm.
just because that may not be my strength. Like I'm sure I could write a bit on how, you know, refills or the buffets of drinks, but I don't know how funny it would be past, you know what I mean? A couple of seconds.
Yeah.
Whereas you give me a quirky news item, I might be able to, or something that happens in the news, I might be able to work something out with that. Yeah. So anyway, but yeah, it was definitely an inspiring thing. And we watched Nanette last week. What was it, last week or 2 weeks ago?
Last week, I think.
Okay, I think so. Okay. And so I feel like we had two very different specials, but they were both very political.
Yeah.
Is there sort of a, I mean, we can make sort of obvious contrast between how Hannah decided to not, you know, decided to be just straight political during the last half hour or so. But just in terms of joke telling, joke style, did you see anything, or did you notice any sort of differences between the two?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, like, they're both political and they both approach similar things. And I could definitely see them, you know, being on a panel and, like, talking and, like, going well with each other. But they go at it, like, in completely different directions.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We've already talked a lot about how he's very political, but it's always funny.
Like, yeah.
Or, well, I mean, obviously it's not. I mean, I just thought that the whole thing was solid. I thought that there weren't really a lot of parts that I felt like it was dragging too much.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was pretty good all the way through. While Hannah Gadsby's special, Nanette, like, she specifically is not funny, like, on purpose. So, I don't know, that's a part of her message that she's sending, and, it is interesting. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of a weird question now that I think about it, to try to, let me ask you, you're taking some notes, like, what are some things that you, you took notes on that we haven't really got to hit on yet?
Well, mostly it was about the Berkeley thing and, the representation in media and, like freedom of speech in the stage. So we've actually talked about all of it.
All right. Yeah, man. Well, I definitely liked it. I mean, I'd recommend it. I'd give it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Two thumbs up.
Yeah. Both thumbs.
Yeah. Both. Let me ask you, so I've read somewhere that Netflix is going to release like 40-something specials on the same day.
Oh.
But it's like some of them are like it's going to be around the world. So it may not.
Oh.
So not everything
but
is
going to
be. Yeah, but still. Yeah. But do you – is there anything else you've been watching? Because I was telling you because I know that Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, the latest season came out.
Yeah.
I binged that and – I'm looking forward to talking about that, and then I started watching the Bo Burnham special. Is there anything you've been able to get on or?
Well, I saw the stand ups was on there.
That was another one, yeah. That I saw, yeah.
I haven't watched it, but I saw it and I was like, I should check that out because that's almost like it's on Netflix, but usually comedy on Netflix is like, you know, your 1 hour specials, so that's going to be someone who's pretty well established.
Yeah.
And these are like 15 minutes, I think. So that's a little bit more, you get to see like mid-level comedy, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the stand-ups. Wait, there's the stand-ups and there's the comedy lineup, and they both are the same
yeah.
premise. Hold on. You mean the...
Which is the new one? I think that's what
that's
I saw.
The one you're, yeah, that's what I think you mean, too. That's the comedy lineup.
Oh, okay.
And then the stand-ups is... It's the one that has two seasons and Nate Bargatze, the first one on it. I will say this. I like the comedy lineup better than the stand-ups.
Mm-hmm.
It just... I don't know. It just seemed like it... went better. Then it just seemed like it was. Now I think the first stand-ups, like season one, I think that's more comparable to
right. Yeah.
Yeah. But season two, it seemed like they were trying some new stuff, and it was fine. In fact, I forget her name. I follow her on Twitter. But the woman who headlines or is the last one, Aparna Nancherla, the one who shows her
phone. Had like a PowerPoint.
Yeah, she had the PowerPoint. She was there. She opened for W. Kamau Bell in Nashville when I saw
her. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, and so she's been a beast for a while, too. But, I'm excited for you to see the comedy lineup because I followed one of them on Instagram. And so it was kind of cool to see her just like crush it. And,
yeah.
She doesn't follow me back. We're not friends. I feel like I should point that out so that no one is thinking that I'm
put that out there.
Bigger time.
You got to follow back to be friends.
Yeah. No, but so that's maybe that's for next week.
Possibly, yeah. Up.
And we'll talk about it off the air because Comedians in Cars is
I've watched the one with Ellen and then I think another one. I haven't watched the rest of it. Okay. The new season.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I have some interesting thoughts with the one on Ellen because it seems to me like she's trying to be serious a little bit and he's just like, nope, making everything a joke.
That's what I was thinking of because I feel like they're different enough that like she like just cares about things like, you know, like a person that does that and he just doesn't care about like anything. Yeah. I feel like he's just like, you know, he's got his money and he's just like, whatever.
He's got his money and if it's not joke or comedy related, he's just like, then why am I thinking about this? Why am I talking about this? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I feel like his show, I feel like he thinks in punchlines anyway, which makes his show so interesting because he has these observations that are also kind of funny. And obviously it's edited. But he's one of those people who just thinks in punchlines where it seems like it's always a joke. And maybe there's a little bit of something to be sacrificed there.
It's maybe like a give and take.
Yeah.
I saw someone complaining about one of the episodes of the new season where he was complaining about like younger comedians who come up with like they try to put their sort of story into their special.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched the episode myself, but what they were saying is that he was saying like I don't care. Like just tell funny jokes, and that's a little bit of like a different approach that he has than from particularly some of the people that we've been reviewing.
He does, and I think that they're, and I know that like there's the HBO show from a couple years ago where it's him, Louis C.K., Chris Rock, and I think Ricky Gervais are all talking about comedy, and they disagree.
Because
something that Jerry, he doesn't like when you comment on the joke. I think that was one of the things that he talks about. But you and I both know that that's a great way to get a laugh, especially if the joke bombs,
right.
Is to comment on the joke and you can kind of redeem that pocket of laughter that was maybe left by the punchline.
Yeah, sometimes there's nights where like everyone's bombing.
Yeah.
And the funniest jokes are when someone's like, well, that was a disaster.
Yeah, you just say, yeah.
Like, because everyone is just like, We're garbage. Like that. Like that's the feeling of like sometimes just the vibe is so bad that like things don't go well for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So like most of the jokes that get laughs are just someone going, "Ah, this is so much fun. Like I'm enjoying myself up here."
Yeah. It's almost like we can just go on acknowledging or pretending as if there's this illusion of comedy going on. Or someone could just break that wall and be like, there's no real comedy. We're just attempting it, you know?
Yeah.
And, I agree. I agree with you on that. Well, we'll talk off air. You know, the beautiful people need to, get back to their daily lives.
Yeah.
So, we release you off into the world, you know, like the beautiful butterflies emerging from the cocoon that is our voices. I don't know what's going on right
now.
I don't know what's happening. All right. We will talk to y'all next week. Have a safe and sexy weekend.
Later.